Hey, this is Jeff Goines with GoinesWriter.com, and I recently had an opportunity to talk with John Acuff, author, blogger, and speaker. John's the author of a new book called Quitter, Closing the Gap Between Your Day Job and Your Dream Job. And here is my interview with John. So real succinctly, if you wouldn't mind, can you just, in a few sentences, summarize what Quitter is about?
If I had to summarize it, I'd say it's about recovering your dream, kind of working through the obstacles that are between you and the place you feel like you're called to be, practicing your dream and being patient with it as you get ready to jump.
One of the things that I've encountered as I've talked to people that are my age in their mid to late 20s and early 30s is there is this sense of not only like lost dream, but dream ambivalence. I ask a lot of people what their dream is, and they say they don't know or they don't have a dream. And I was wondering, what's your take on that? Does everybody have a dream? Are people more afraid now to name their dreams than before? What are your thoughts on that?
I think everyone does have a dream in the sense that we've all been uniquely created with something that's true of us and not true of anyone else in the same way. I think that a lot of times people need permission to dream because for a variety of reasons they've been told they can't. I think the other reason is that sometimes we've defined dream in a really weird way, and people say, well, I don't have a dream, I'm not a painter. Well, that's a very different thing. You know, it's not that a dream just means you write a book or you do, you know, an album or you paint. That's not the answer to the question, do you have a dream? I think that we just don't know how to do it, or we don't know where to start. What I hear when I ask people if they have their dream, they say, if I don't know what it is, I've got a couple different things I really like. And the challenge is that when they say that, what often happens next is they don't act on any of them. You know, they say, I have five things I really enjoy doing, and I'm not going to do any of them. I don't know where to start, so I won't start on any of them. So that's one of the things I think that paralyzes us.
I don't know what you've noticed, but it seems to me that over the past couple of years, this talk of your dream job or dreaming in general has become more prevalent. Is there a reemergence of dreaming in our culture? And if so, why do you think that is?
I think so. I mean, I look at it and think, you know, my grandfather's generation, he never came home from managing a Woolworth and said, my dream wasn't fed today. He did his job. He paid his bills. You know, he did what he was supposed to do. And so I think there is this sense of great expectation for us of what's possible. I think where it gets corrupted is when it leads to entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
What I've seen is that we all can bump into something that we love doing. And if we don't nurture that and grow that and feed that, we often become entitled about that. Where if we nurture it and feed it and grow it, we become engaged in that. And I think you see that with a lot of employees that are at jobs they don't love. You know, you don't know what to do, and so you start to feel like these people don't get me, they don't understand me, they're not utilizing my talent, and you get kind of entitled in that versus working on your dream, being patient on your dream, and becoming engaged in that.
I'm in the middle of Quitter right now, and I thought it was interesting that you begin by telling someone not to quit, and that people are living in this tension between what they're doing right now and what they'd really like to be doing. And I appreciated that a lot of the book, it seems, is just practical information and stories and guidance about how to start living your dream now. And I know that you're leading to this point of, okay, now it's okay to quit. Now it's okay to step into this. And I know that that's exactly what you've done over the past year or two. What are some, and I'm sure this is going to be covered in the book, so pardon my asking this, but what are some signs that it's time to quit, that it's time to quit your day job and begin to step into your dream job?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's, we're doing this Quitter conference in July 30th, and I'm working on the content for that right now. And the last segment that I'll be covering is, how do you know when it's time to jump? And that's a question I get a lot. You know, what are the signs? And for us, one of the things my wife and I, you know, from my own experience, we built what we kind of call an opportunity filter. Part of the challenge is that people go, I got to find my perfect job. And there's no such thing as a perfect job. You know, there's no such thing as a job where you only do the things you love 100% of the day. Like that doesn't exist. And looking for a perfect job often blinds you from finding your dream job. So what we did was we created an opportunity filter. And for us, that looked like saying, okay, I want to work somewhere where somebody has grown a personal brand successfully and humbly. I want to work somewhere in the Southeast. That's where our family is. We'd like to stay there. I don't feel called to a church. I have friends that work at churches. I love that they love their job. I don't feel called to a church. I want to work somewhere where faith is part of the culture, not just in pockets. And so as we started to build this opportunity filter, what it did was that when the Dave Ramsey opportunity came along, we could plug that in. And another opportunity in the same season came along at the same exact time, and it looked amazing. But as we plugged it into the opportunity filter, we realized it didn't meet as many of our, you know, criteria. Mm. And so that's one of the signs when you know it's time to go, when you've designed this opportunity filter. And it'll range from specific to very loose, like the idea of we want faith to be part of it. How do you measure that? That's not a number. Where, like, another one was, you know, we don't want to work at a church. That's very specific. That one was easy to determine and go, oh, this thing is great, but it's a church, so it doesn't fit the opportunity filter. So that's one of the big signs for me is when you've got an opportunity that fits that criteria that you've established. Or when the, you know, another one for us is that we had a place to land. When I quit, I had 8 jobs in 8 years, and every time I'd quit, I wouldn't look at where I was landing. I'd just focus on where I was escaping from. And so this felt like I was going to land somewhere versus just get out of where I currently was. And that's why the first chapter is don't quit your day job, because a lot of times when you're in a really bad attitude, frustrated point of view, it's tough to make a great decision in that moment.
One of the hypotheses I have about dreaming, and I'd love your thoughts on this, is it seems like in many respects it's a lifelong process. And I'm wondering, you know, you've made this very dramatic transition. You're helping other people make practical steps towards the work that they love. Is there such a thing as arriving? Have you arrived at your dream? I mean, are you completely fulfilled and content and have nowhere else to aspire to? What does that look like for you personally?
No. I think that's a great hypothesis. There's new opportunity and new challenges. And the things you get to do change, but you still have to wrestle with fears and wrestle with, you know, hope and all these different things. And so I don't feel done. Like, I didn't slap my hands together and go, okay, there, I got that accomplished.
Yeah.
I feel like I have, you know, taken a dream job. So in that sense, I do feel like I've found a dream job. But now I get to perform in that job. You know, this weekend I'll go to Fox and Friends and sit on the couch on, you know, national television in front of hundreds of thousands of people. I don't know how to do that. That's a new opportunity. That's a stretch opportunity.
Yeah.
I've never done that. You know, that's me learning new things. The Quitter Conference is me. I've never spoken on for 6 hours of content or created that, the flow, the rhythm. And so that's new.
Mm.
And there's all these new things that come up as you start to do that. I mean, the voice that tells you, who are you to do that, doesn't disappear when you get to your dream job. If anything, it gets louder because it's frustrated that you're there.
Mm.
You know, you only hear voices of doubt like that when you actually start to do things that you're called to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you're living a flat kind of common life where you don't take risks, where you don't live out of your heart, you won't get bothered by those voices that much. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole new set of things that come up as you step into that.
Yeah. That's great. This may be an indicator of the type of people that I know and some of my own, you know, personal hobbies, but it seems that a lot of people have a dream like yours, that a lot of people aspire to live this life that you've begun to live, to write professionally and speak professionally and bring a message to a large audience of people. for those people who share that dream, and I'm sure that it has different flavors depending on various contexts, what's some practical advice that you have for somebody who wants to be a writer, who wants to be a speaker, who wants to communicate professionally? How do they bridge the gap between working in a cubicle or an office and being on stage or publishing their work?
A big part of it is practice. And I think I wrote about this today, people will send me questions like, how do I get paid to speak? How do I get paid to do my dream? That's a great question eventually. The first question, though, is how do I get great at my dream? How do I do 100 speeches for free before I get paid for one? How do I write, 500,000 words on a blog before you get to write a book?
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, is the hard work involved, whether it's writing, speaking, or, becoming an inventor, is the willingness to do that. And so for me, what that looked like, I spoke at a rehab center a couple times when I lived in Atlanta, and it was 20 people, and they didn't particularly want to hear a lot of what I said, but I knew that those folks needed hope. Like, they really needed hope, and nobody aspires to that. Like, the head of the rehab place isn't going through 50 applications or 50 emails from speakers going, "Hey, can I please come there and share some hope?" Yeah. So it was a great chance for me to, in a difficult environment, go share hope and go speak. And, if this was really a gift I felt like I was called to use, to go use that. So finding those kind of places where you go, okay, I'm going to go get better at this, and I'm going to give hope in the process and share. And so to me, that's the kind of stuff you need to do versus going, how do I get on a big stage right away?
Mm-hmm.
How do I, because a lot of those opportunities, and I talk about it in the book, like, I really believe that your dream always outsizes your talent at first. And you've got to give your talent a chance to grow.
Mm.
And so it means writing a blog that nobody reads. It means speaking at a place that nobody paid you to be at, that 25 people are at and some leave.
Mm-hmm. John, I've heard you share before about, in fact, I think this was just an illustration at the Dreamier event where Ben was making a point that when you move into your dream, there's confirmation. But I know that in the book, you talk about hustle. And so what's the balance between there being a clear confirmation, whether it's God or people around you saying, yes, this is what you're supposed to be doing. And I know for you, one of those things was starting the blog, Stuff Christians Like, and very quickly there was a significant following around that, which I can only imagine confirmed this idea that you had. What's the tension? How do you resolve that, doing stuff that gets confirmed or waiting for permission to act or confirmation to move into something, and just working your tail off?
It is a balance. You're exactly right. And part of the challenge with dreaming is that there are always these big "this is it" moments where you go, "Oh, I got my confirmation. This is it." So one for me is I come up to Dave Ramsey's team in 2008, and I speak at their devotional, their weekly devotional. It's 250, 300 people, and it's amazing. I get a standing ovation. It couldn't have gone better. And somebody chasing me down the parking lot as I go to leave and says, "Hey, there's this great job that you'd be perfect for. We'd love to talk about that. HR would love to talk to you." And I drive back to Atlanta, and I call my wife and say, "This is it. We're moving to Nashville." We call our parents, and it wouldn't be for another 18 months. When I would actually come up. And at the time, I didn't enjoy those 18 months. I'd like to say I was mature and said, "Okay, well, I'll just continue to be patient," but looking back on them now, I see that my dream needed time to mature and incubate. Now, it didn't mean that after that didn't happen, a week later, I quit writing. So the big thing I try to encourage people is you need to find the passion, the core within, what you're made to do, and do that. Like, you need to do the thing that if you didn't do would be killing you. Like, my mother-in-law said it this way, and she's super smart, which is super awesome for a mother-in-law. for me to have. And people said to her, how does John do it? How does he write these blogs? How does he do it? And she said, the bigger question is, how did he not do it? You know, where was this going before? So I think there's definitely confirmation. But you, for me, I can't, you know, I enjoy the confirmation, but I kind of look at it and go, the biggest thing is being obedient to that thing I have inside me that I feel like God has given me, and I'm going to step into that. And so I'm going to write because that's what writers do. I'm going to speak because that's what speakers do. And as those opportunities come up, that's great. And there's certainly confirmations where you'll get invited back to a conference, and that's a great confirmation that the first time went well, and you felt like they felt like you did a good job, and that's a ton of fun. But for me, it's really, am I continuing to be obedient to the thing I feel called to do? Because that thing won't change. Like, there'll come a time where I don't get the phone calls, or I don't get the opportunities, or I don't get the whatevers. And what happens is that if you allow feedback from other people, and you didn't ask feedback, but that's one thing that sometimes people take as confirmation. But if you allow feedback from other people to be the thing that eventually drives you, when they stop giving it to you, they essentially tell you to stop dreaming. And that's a really powerful control to put into somebody else's hands. So I'm always trying to wrestle with that, to be appreciative and gracious to the things that come up, but know that at the end of the day, I have to have kind of that coal mine mentality of, I write because that's what writers do.
That's good. Okay, last question, because I know you need to go. Since you haven't arrived, since it's just a whole new context with new challenges, and you're growing into this next season of life, what's next for you? What's on the horizon? I know you're doing this Quitter conference. What else is coming up for you? What's next that you're working on?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the big next thing. The thing I'm personally working on that. We'll see if it becomes a book down the road. I'm not sure. I just know that I need it first. Is looking at what happens when you change the way you think. I bumped into three or four people that are wildly successful who I really, really am inspired by in a week, a single week. And individually, separately, they all told me the same thing. And that was, when I realized that my thoughts impact my actions, which impact my decisions, I changed the way I think and my whole life changed. So I've always had a very negative internal dialogue, very quick, very negative, very cynical. And even in the midst of all this right now, like, one of the voices that I wrestle with is, are you happy? Like, I've heard that every day I've gotten up for the last 15 years, are you happy? And I've always engaged and said, well, you know, here's what I think. And so in the midst of releasing this book and things going really well, you know, I hear the voice, are you happy? And I go, well, I'm not always happy. I mean, sometimes I'm sad. Oh, really? Sad? Right now? You're at your dream job. If you're not happy now, I'm not sure you'll ever be happy. Oh, I hadn't thought about that. That makes me even more unhappy. Maybe there's something today that I could do perfectly that would make me happy. Wow, that puts a lot of pressure on today. You know, my entire happiness is based on the things I do today. I didn't, you know, and spin. And so what I'm curious about, at least for, you know, my own life, my own, you know, the way I think is, I've always looked at it as, okay, God, you have to change the way I think. And I just recently feel like he's like, no, that's the gift. We just need to fuel it with hope and truth. Like, imagine what that head does with a positive message. You know, that gift, that machine, the ability to think quickly and spin out on stories is a gift. It's just been fed the wrong things. And so that's what I'm curious about. And the more people I talk to, whether they're artists, you know, stay-at-home moms, accountants, whatever, about that idea of, what are the voices inside tell you? You know, what do your doubt and fears look like? You know, what do you think about just naturally? That's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And it feels like it fits within the context of this Quitter conversation. So that's kind of the next thing that, from a personal point of view and maybe even a book project, I'm really curious about.
Cool. Thanks, John. That was John Acuff, author of Quitter. To find out more about John, go to johnacuff.com and subscribe to his blog. You can also visit quitterbook.com. And this is Jeff Goines from goineswriter.com. Thanks for listening.